This is Her Story
with Kathy Romano
on 95.7 Ben FM.
Welcome to Her Story. I'm your host, Kathy Romano. In addition to my role on Ben FM, I've been on the Preston and Steve show for nearly 15 years. Because of my radio career, I have the honor of meeting a lot of interesting people, and everyone I meet has their own unique story. But how would you ever know that story if you don't talk to them? You may not know just how amazing they are by looking at them. So when people ask me about Her Story and what the show is all about, this is how I explain it. What do you think when you pass a woman on the street? Have you ever stopped to think, who is she and what's her story? We see these women every day. Maybe you smile at each other, maybe you say hi, or maybe you just keep walking. But maybe when she passes you on the street, you notice this flawless young woman who presents so calmly. But did you know that she is a singer and uses her beautiful voice to soothe terminally ill patients as they are actively dying? Maybe you notice her athletic body and bright purple hair. But what you don't know is that at the age of 15, she was a victim of statutory rape. Maybe you see her confident stature, but did you know that she has committed her career to helping women have children? That's how I explain the show. These ordinary women have extraordinary stories. Each one of those women I just mentioned are among the number of guests I've had the honor of speaking with on Her Story. Her Story is about empowering women, influential women, women who in some way shape the society we live in, and women who have interesting stories to tell. I'm just here to use the radio platform to help assure these women's stories are told.
95.7 Ben FM presents Her Story with Kathy Romano.
Today's guest is a board-certified music therapist who works with hospice patients and their families. Pietra Del Pizzo, also known as Petey, sings to terminally ill patients. Before working in hospice care, Petey spent hours doing an internship with adults with mental illness who have committed murders and sex crimes. She finds music not only to be healing to her patients, but to herself as well. Please welcome Petey to Her Story. Thank you for coming by.
Thanks for having me.
So this is a very interesting profession. You started out knowing that you wanted to do music therapy.
Yes. Actually, in high school, I went on a service trip and we were at a homeless shelter. And at the homeless shelter, I was trying to speak Spanish to this one gentleman because I was taking Spanish class. And a few tables over, my friends were speaking about me saying, Petey can sing. She can sing really well. And I looked around the room and it was just this atmosphere of depression. I mean, there were battered women and children and it was so sad and depressing. My friend said, Petey, you should sing. I looked around and I said, I don't think this is appropriate time or place. And then the homeless gentleman looked at me and he said, what, you won't sing to me because I'm homeless? And I said, well, now I have to sing. So I sang the first song that came to my head, which was My Girl. And everyone at the homeless shelters joined in with me singing. And the atmosphere changed from one of hopelessness and depression to hope. And in that moment, I had no idea what music therapy was, but I was like, I need to do this for the rest of my life. It was like love at first sight.
And that was in high school?
Yeah, I was 17.
Wow.
And then I did research and my mom helped me and I found music therapy.
Talk a little bit about your internship. You worked with people who committed murders and sex crimes.
Yeah, that was pretty awesome. So yeah, so it was like a jail/hospital. So the one unit was that, and then there was other units that were might not have committed crimes yet, or they were attempting suicide or suicidal ideation, and instead of the cops taking them to jail or something like that, they brought them to that hospital. There was a whole unit of clients where they had committed murders and sex crimes, and I used music interventions to work on non-musical goals. A lot of it was dealing with the struggles of being there. And I truly believe what I learned there is that human beings will do whatever it takes to feel safe. I think that what we need in life is Erickson's beliefs of food, shelter, and water and safety. And when we don't feel safe, we will do whatever it takes to feel safe. I mean, I had clients have voices tell them that they need to kill their parents. Things like that, where I don't know what it would be like to be haunted by voices all day long and tormenting you all day long. And
how then do you think music therapy helped people like that?
People who suffer from schizophrenia, I had a few of those clients even tell me music is the only thing that stops the voices. And they only got music therapy once a week. So for an hour, once a week, the voices would stop. Even medications would not help, but music for some reason stimulated something in their brain. Music is able to break down walls and boundaries and is able to be stimulated everywhere in the brain, not just one area. So if you're struggling in one area, music has a way to tap into you in another way and then use your psychology and help work on those non-musical goals of decreasing stress, increasing self-expression, decreasing anger, increasing emotional expression, different stuff like that.
Now, you work with hospice patients, so you're mm-hmm. working with people who are terminally ill or people who are actively dying. Is it correct to say that?
Yeah. So most of my patients, I mean, I've had some clients on for like 2 years, which is very long, but I'm a part of their journey. So when someone's actively dying, it's a very different experience. I am called to their bedside, and the last sense to leave our body is hearing. So the first one I ever experienced was all by myself. It was just me and the client, and I was singing In the Arms of the Angels. And I was singing that song, and we got to the refrain, and he took his last breath. I remember the family couldn't be there, and I was like, I'll give him a call. And I got to tell them, you know, your loved one didn't pass by himself, and that he actually passed while I was singing to him. And it was a beautiful experience. And they were so thankful and grateful to hear that, because, I mean, imagine the guilt. You're trying to get to be with your loved one and they're gone and you can't say goodbye. Another client that passed, it was me and his son and him. The patient was struggling with religion. And so I did a song that I think of when I think of struggling, Alleluia.
Sure.
The way I interpret that is just struggling with religion and really struggling with your spirituality. And the son told me that he was very skeptical about music therapy and what could this do? And he passed during that song. And his son looked at me and just started bawling and was like, oh my gosh, I'm so thankful that you came and you did this. And honestly, when you walked in with your guitar, I was so skeptical, but that was just such a beautiful way for my father to pass. And I think he got what he needed.
You seem like a very old soul in a very young, beautiful body.
Thank you.
Even just talking to you, it's calming.
Yeah. Some people are like, how are you so calm? And sometimes I'm internally freaking out, or I'm like, oh my God, how am I going to navigate this or get through this? Especially in situations with the psychiatric center with people who commit murders and sex crimes. Sometimes they were unstable. I had a patient suing at me once, and I remember in the moment I'm thinking, what do I do? But people on the outside were like, you remain so calm. And I think that's just something I learned from all my training and from my supervisor. My supervisor, Audrey Hasek, she was always super calm. And even if she was internally freaking out, she always remained calm in situations. I think I picked that up from her. And
are you spiritual?
Oh, yeah. People ask right away, what's it like working in hospice? And I mean, of course, you question your own spirituality and you question your religion and you question all of that. For me, it strengthened it for me. There's things I've seen and done that you'd have to be there to witness it. But I know that there's something bigger than us out here. I know it because I've seen it and I felt it. When you see and feel things like that, you just know it's not a belief anymore. It's like a fact.
95.7 Ben FM presents Her Story with Kathy Romano.
Amy Archit published her blog titled, I Chose to Be Raped, My Me Too Story. She says she contemplated posting her writings for a while. Amy just made public her story that at the age of 15, she allegedly had a sexual relationship with a 30-year-old man. Although a situation of this kind would be categorized as statutory rape, and Amy says she now knows she was a victim, she says she was a willing participant and still holds part of the blame for her involvement. She opens the blog by saying, this week, the Me Too movement hit Facebook. I felt a sense of understanding and power for all women. I also felt conflicted. Conflicted because I wanted to say me too, but I felt I didn't deserve it. That my story couldn't compare to women who experienced true sexual assault. How could I claim me too when I chose to be raped? Please welcome Amy Archit to Her Story. Hi, Amy.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Certainly takes a strong person to get through a situation like that and to be comfortable enough to put your story out there.
Thank you. It was definitely challenging. I contemplated it for over 6 months to tell my story.
This happened when you were 15. How old are you now?
I am 29 now. I was part of this particular dance community, and that community was a bit older. I acted a lot older, and I tried to represent myself that way. But back home with my friends, we were still, you know, giggling little 15-year-olds. I was 14 when we first met, and he was 29, and I was in his dance class. The second we kind of rotate in the classes, and I came up to him, and he touched my hand very, almost affectionately, even though we didn't know each other. And there was an instant kind of look of attraction.
In your blog, you talk about how he, quote, groomed you.
There was definitely a lot of flirting in the beginning, and then we had a moment where we realized how old each other was. And I would say for maybe a week or two, things back down, and the flirting kind of calm down. I was still around and he knew that I was a good dancer. So he started kind of prepping me. He was about to lose his dance partner. And so he started kind of actively training me a little bit more than others because he thought I would be a good replacement. He would do things like whenever I danced with him, he would rub his thumb or finger on the middle of my hand, something that nobody else would see, but I would feel. He would make comments, things that I remember to this day. I remember him actually saying it twice in 1 week. Oh, I'm going to marry this girl one day. Our pecks on the cheek turned to pecks on the lips and just like lingering touches. It also then started to extend to conversations we started having over the internet, which started to take even a more personal tone.
Did you become his dance partner?
Yes, I did.
You also state that you don't pretend to be innocent in all of this. Some people would agree with you, but others might say that you were a child and he was a full-blown adult man who knew better. You say that you looked older than you were at the age of 15. You dressed differently. You danced differently. You acted older.
Yeah, I very much dressed a little bit more scandalous. And that wasn't just because of the salsa community. It was kind of a personality trait of mine. I really tried to tone back any kind of childish talk or behavior.
You grew up quick.
Yes, very quick.
So did your parents, did your friends see this happening?
Yes, but I had two different lives. I had my school life and then I had my salsa life.
Tell me then when it progressed, when it got to the point where you were then having a sexual relationship.
I was borrowing my sister's ID that would have said that I was 19. He joked that that was old enough for him to date. And that is what led to the first kiss. From there, kissing went into all other sexual things. It was about 6 months before it went all the way.
You were a virgin at the time?
Yes, I was a virgin.
And did he know that?
Yes, he definitely did.
So being almost 30 now, do you see what this relationship was?
I very much see what this relationship was. Being almost 30 now, it took me a really long time to get here, but I understand that him not loving me, whether he did or not, he didn't love me in an appropriate way, has nothing to do with me. At the time, I really still loved him, but I also really held on a lot of guilt. I thought I was responsible. I did not see it as statutory rape. It took probably 2 or 3 years afterwards when I started to use the word statutory rape. My brain matured and I started thinking differently as I got older.
Of course.
And I could remember how I thought at 15 and I could suddenly see the difference.
Tell me a little bit then about the downfall. So you said you kind of just had a breaking point and there was sadness and eating disorder. You stopped performing. You saw a psychologist. There was a lot that happened.
Yeah. Before it even ended, I started overeating. I originally started with excessive dieting that kind of backfired. Eventually, I had a full-blown binge eating disorder. My psychologist was the first adult I told. And I looked for someone who dealt with eating disorders. I made it all about food. And then when I got to the doctor's office, the psychologist, I just immediately told her what was going on. And we never talked about food.
You stopped performing.
Yeah, I had gained about 30 pounds. And I'm only 4'10". So you put 30 pounds on a tiny girl and it's noticeable.
Was he scared? Was he nervous once it all came out?
I don't think so.
Did he know he was doing something wrong?
I still don't think he does.
Tell me about the aftermath then and the years following all of this.
I let myself get taken advantage by a lot of men. So I have a lot of memories of feeling like sex was the only way that I could get love. Because with the relationship with this guy, that is how he made me feel.
Are you truly healed?
I don't think I'm ever truly healed. I think there's always going to be a scar, but I've done a lot of soul searching and I'm at a point where I can tell my story with a certain amount of indifference where I can see it in the past. I can tell my story and I can remember it, but I don't feel it the way I used to.
95.7 Ben FM presents Her Story with Kathy Romano.
Today's guest is a highly regarded reproductive endocrinologist, otherwise known as a fertility specialist. Dr. Deanna Brazil has committed her career to helping clients achieve their goal of having children and helping them pass on the gift of life. Please welcome Dr. Deanna Brazil to Her Story. Hi, doctor.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Yeah, thanks for coming in.
My honor.
What is the time span of schooling and
16 years, including college.
16 years?
Yes.
Oh my God. And why that? Why did you choose that?
Well, I knew when I delivered my very first baby that I loved the field of obstetrics. However, it requires, as you can imagine, late hours, early morning hours, and things that were a little bit less conducive to having a family of my own. And the field of infertility was such a beautiful field to me because I can allow people to help build the family that they want, perhaps wouldn't be able to do so otherwise. And so I find it truly a privilege and a gift. I often tell my patients, I don't call you infertility, I call you subfertile, because I will get you pregnant. We just have to figure out the best way to do so.
So talk a little bit about the steps then. So you say that it doesn't always go to IVF. What are Correct. Some of the steps that the women or the couples have to go through, and how taxing is it on a woman?
Well, it depends on their attitude towards it. I think that some women, by the time that they come to me, they're emotionally spent because they've been trying for a while, and sometimes for several months also under the care of their OBGYNs. Don't wait until you're exhausted emotionally before you come see me. Initially, I'll do maybe a month or two of just trying to play detective, as I call it, try to figure out what's going on and see if there's anything I can optimize prior to starting with anything more aggressive. That is obviously contingent upon the woman's duration of time trying and how old she is.
Okay, so if somebody who's over 40 walks into your office, you're going to go about it a different way.
Well, I'm going to do the same testing because that all needs to be performed. But I'll probably recommend in discussing with her, of course, she has autonomy to do what she feels most comfortable. But I'll typically recommend moving towards Clomid, which is a medication that we use. It's just an oral drug. It's inexpensive. And its purpose in this situation would be to cause ovulation of more than one egg.
Can you talk a little bit about women freezing their eggs?
Freezing your eggs allows you an opportunity to keep your fertility potential exactly where it is at the present time, because we only get older with each day that elapses, right? I think it's something that more women should take advantage of. Had it been available when I was in my 30s, I certainly would have been interested in doing it.
So do you mean someone should just go and freeze their eggs if they're not ready to have a child?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And in fact, I encourage it. Unfortunately, a lot of women don't think of it until they're already in their 40s. And that's not an ideal time to do it because of the egg quality issues that we were discussing earlier. When we freeze eggs, we're not able to know whether they're good or not until they're fertilized, as I was alluding to earlier as well.
Right.
So when a woman comes in her 40s and she's trying to freeze eggs, I don't know if they're going to be of any benefit to her when she comes back to thaw them. The ideal time to do it really is between age 30 and 35. Most of the patients I've seen for egg freezing are actually between 35 and 40, and it's not too late at that point to do it. But if you think you would be interested in delaying your childbearing for whatever reason, you've not found Mr. Right, you know that you have a long training in front of you, many years of schooling, and even if you have a husband but you're just not ready yet, that's an ideal opportunity for you to take a lot of the heat off of you.
Thank you so much for coming by. It was really interesting. I think I learned a lot today, and
my pleasure.
I hope our listeners did too.
Thank you for having me.
So there you have it. I thought that was a good explanation of what the show is all about. If you don't listen to Her Story every Sunday morning, I thought maybe that would give you a good idea about what I do here on Her Story. If you do listen each Sunday morning, I appreciate it. Thank you so much for being with me. I have great guests coming up this month and all year long. We also have a few Her Story luncheons throughout the year that you can win an invite to. So always tune in to 95.7 Ben FM. And don't forget, listen to Her Story Sunday mornings, 7:30 in the morning. There's also a podcast that's available on the website, 957benfm.com. We all have a story that's worth being told. If you'd like to tell your story, I'd love to hear it. Please email me. You can submit your story to herstory@957benfm.com. Thanks again for joining me. I'm Kathy Romano. Enjoy the rest of your Sunday.
This has been Her Story with Kathy Romano. Her Story is produced by WBEN-FM in Philadelphia and airs weekly or on demand on your mobile device. Listen or subscribe at 957benfm.com.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.